Then I would take an avocado seed and nail it to the ceiling and begin loose wig 8, side 4.
Oh, I do, Ben. I do think that the intuitive faculty is much more important than the rational, you know, faculty. As for thinking, I think very little thinking is ever done. I don't think men really think. I think they're just reacting all the time. They're paraphrasing, they're repeating what they've heard, and, you know, it's not their own. No real thinking gets done except by very rare individuals. Now and then the realm of science, mathematics, do you think? And now and then the realm of philosophy and so on. But the man in the street, the ordinary man, even the ordinary intelligent, cultured man, is not, to my mind, a man who thinks. Yes.
I was from Seattle from location, and this guy climbed up an upper berth, and nobody knew he had a toupee on, but when he climbed up, his toupee slid off and fell in the berth below. So he just stuck his hand in between the curtains. He didn't want to wake the people up, so he started feeling around for his toupee, and pretty soon a voice said, "That's it, that's it." And he said, "Oh, no, it ain't. Mine's parted on the side."
Yes, 49, 1950. Now it's jazz. The place is roaring. All beautiful girls in there. One mad brunette at the bar, drunk with her boys. One strange chick I remember from somewhere, wearing a simple skirt with pockets, her hands in there. Short haircut, slouch, talking to everybody. Up and down the stairs they come. The bartenders are the regular band of Jack and the heavenly drummer who looks up in the sky with blue eyes, with a beard. He's wailing beer caps of bottles and jamming at the cash register, and everything is going to the beat. It's the B generation. It's Bayat. It's the beat to keep. It's the beat of the heart. It's being beat and down in the world and like old-time lowdown. And like in ancient civilizations, the slave boatmen rowing galleys to a beat. And servants spinning pottery to a beat. The faces, a face like hunkies in New York. Hunky, whom you'll see on Times Square, somnolent and alert, sad, sweet, and dark, holy, just out of jail, martyred, tortured by sidewalks, starved for sex and companionship, open to anything. Ready to introduce a new world,
shrug. See, because the serpent is the left hand of God. And what we call God, Jehovah, Jesus Christ, etc., that's the right hand. But Jesus Christ sits on the right hand of the Father. Nobody ever says who sits on the left. Because let not your left hand know what your right hand doeth.
You see? Yes, I love even more, though, the man of the Middle Ages, strangely enough.
I would think so. That's
the
right.
Man of the Middle Ages. Even above the man of the Renaissance, Ben, because I think then the man was more whole, more integrated. Even though I don't subscribe to that religion of the middle man, the man of the Middle Ages, you know, and I think it worked much harm, still I see him working or floating or moving in a sort of an egg. You know, in the old Latin writer Petronius, there's that image that our mother, the earth, is round like an egg. This is a very wonderful image, and it comes out strong again in the Renaissance, in Rabelais. He again talks that way, and he is a rounded man, a humanist. But But when the Middle Ages, when that broke down, and there came the schism, and men became more the individualist instead of the collective man, the man that was an integral part of society in every sphere, in every realm. When he became more individualistic, the whole world in which he was in, globe, fell apart, do you see? And there began the great confusion in which we are today, do you see? We have no standards, no codes, no tenets, no dogmas, no doctrines by which we live and die anymore, do you see?
We have no egg fluid to mother us.
That's right.
Isn't it better this way?
We're sort of adrift, and each man for himself and the devil take the hindmost, do you know? It's all very wonderful in one sense, but it's perilous. And the only men who can successfully cut adrift like that would be men of great potentiality, of wisdom, imbued with something more than we are imbued with. What, after all, are we given from childhood? I mean, through education, through church, through society, politics, or anything, you know. What are we staunchly raised and built on, nourished on? What is the rock? There is no rock. Is there an ark that we can hope to take refuge in, even? There isn't any such thing. You know, do I make sense?
That we will follow the theory of those astronomers who maintain that the universe is not a steady state thing, but there was an enormous bang billions of years ago, and from this bang all the galaxies were thrown out into space. Now, then you look back at this as something which happened in the past and which is, as it were, the cause of the present. But what I would say is that bang is still going on. When you take a lovely bottle of black ink and throw it as hard as you can at a white wall and smash it, all it goes whoosh like this, you know. And in the center it's dense, but on the out fringes it has all kinds of interesting curlicues. And that's all, you see, one splash. Now, in the same way, we are at the moment sitting in this room and talking and thinking. We are all the little curlicues out on the end of the original cosmic bang. We are it. We are not effects of it.
There was a little alley in San Francisco, back of the Southern Pacific Station at 3rd and Townsend. In red brick of drowsy, lazy afternoons with everybody at work, in offices, in the air you feel the impending rush of their commuter frenzy. As soon they'll be charging en masse from Market and Sansom Building on foot and in buses and all well-dressed to working man Frisco of walk-up truck drivers. And even the poor grime-bemarked Third Street of lost bums, even Negroes so hopeless and long left east and meanings of responsibility and try. But now all they do is stand there spitting in the broken glass, sometimes 50 in one afternoon against one wall at 3rd and Howard. Here's all these Milbrae and San Carlos neat necktied producers and commuters of America and steel civilization rushing by with San Francisco Chronicles and green called bulletins, not even enough time to be disdainful. They've got to catch 130, 132, 134, 136, all the way up to 146 till the time of evening supper in homes of the railroad earth, when high in the sky the magic stars ride above the following hot shot freight trains. It's all in California. It's all a sea. I swim out of it in afternoons of sun-hot meditation in my jeans with head on handkerchief on brakeman's lantern, or if not working, on book. I look up at blue sky of perfect lost purity and feel the warp of wood of old America beneath me. And I have insane conversations with Negroes in second-story windows above, and everything is pouring in. The switching moves of boxcars in that little alley, which is so much like the alleys of Lowell, and I hear far off in the sense of coming night that engine calling our mountains. But it was that beautiful cut of clouds I could always see above the little SB alley. Puffs floating by from Oakland, or the gate of Marin to the north, or San Jose south. The clarity of Cal to break your heart. It was the fantastic drowse and drum hum of lum mum afternoon, nothing to do. Old Frisco with end of land sadness. The people. The alley full of trucks and cars of businesses nearabouts. Nobody knew or far from cared who I was all my life, 3,500 miles from birth, all opened up and at last belonged to me in great America. Now it's night in Third Street. The keen little neons and also yellow bulb lights of impossible to believe flops. The dark ruined shadows moving back of torn yellow shades like a degenerate china with no money. The cats in Annie's alley. The flop comes on, moans, rolls. The street is loaded with darkness. Blue sky above with stars hanging high over old hotel roofs and blowers of hotels mooning out dusts of interior. The grime inside the word in mouths falling out tooth by tooth. The reading rooms tick-tock, big clock with creak chair and slant boards and old faces looking up over rimless spectacles bought in some West Virginia or Florida or Liverpool, England pawn shop long before I was born. And across rains, they've come to the end of the land sadness, end of the world gladness. All your San Francisco will have to fall eventually and burn again.
He was from...
Neil Cassidy is Jack Kerouac's alter ego. And then after he wrote...
A couple weeks ago, a guy named David Schmuck pulled up with his 30 head. He's dead now, right here in the city.
What did he do?
He set himself on fire and a little note that this is for all the Buddhists and mysterious things.
Was it for
a 19-year-old kid? Yeah, burned himself alive. It's all the civil rights, all the kid, anybody on any side, on every side, that's right. You gotta have a panoramic view to this thing. The Earth's gonna tell a little bit, because natural catastrophes are happening everywhere, all the forms are dead. You can handle, say you talk to a policeman, you know, all forms are known.
He knows the individual, that's America, man. America is digging the individual, being an individual. You dug Neil Cassidy as the individual American, the prototype that contained Americana.
I went here yesterday and jumbling jittery around and I still look like I was high, so I just let people think I was high. Everybody has forms and everything's known and then the forms are changing. There's no life in the forms. Life goes where the new forms are, so you're not going to have this is all hindsight that you're talking about. It's already too late. The Pentagon's taking care of all that. We're doing this deliberately. As far as that goes.
The Pentagon is doing what?
Well, I don't know who's running the country, do you?
No, I have no idea who's running the country.
Well, then
that's a long way. Nobody knows who's running the country anymore. Well,
just enjoy it.
Come on. For years it's been looking like that.
Cassidy, of course, was far from a model.
Yeah, sooner or later, maybe. Unless we're able to say something to clarify the atmosphere a little bit.
If only I had a good Pentagon general for a friend, yeah. That'd be all right.
Then, this 19th century philosophy of man's place in the world and his identity has become the most plausible common sense. In other words, people say they are Christians, they say they are Jews, they say they are theosophists, Vedantists, Buddhists, etc., etc., but they are not. Because they know in their heart of hearts, whatever they choose to believe, that the world is as described in the 19th century myth, because that's become our common sense. If people were Christians, they'd be screaming in the streets. They're not screaming in the streets. They'd be taking full-page ads. They'd be sponsoring TV programs about the tremendous urgency of this Christian myth, and they're not doing anything of the kind. A few Jehovah's Witnesses are doing it, but they are fairly polite when they come to your front door. They show no urgency, really. So they don't believe it, because the plausible myth of our age is the myth of the fully automatic model of the universe, in which man is a fluke, and which he doesn't really belong, he's a chance operation, and when you're dead, you're dead, and that's all there is to it. And that's so plausible that really almost everyone believes in it, without realizing that it is made out of whole cloth. It's nothing but a myth. a way of looking at things, a way of striking an attitude. But this is the powerful, powerful idea that governs our children and that gives us our sense of basic identity, alienation, so that we live always in expectation of the future, which of course never happens. Well, enough of me for the moment.
Preachers in my hometown used to ride bicycles to church every Sunday. In opposite direction, they stopped to chat a while before they go to church. And one Sunday, one preacher was riding, the other one was walking. And he stopped to talk. He said, "Rev, what happened to your bicycle?" My reverend said, "Well, somebody in my congregation stole my bicycle. And I don't know what to do with it." Reverend said, "Well, look, if you want your bicycle and go to church this Sunday, all you do is say the Ten Commandments. When you get the commandment which says, 'Thou shalt not steal,' ever who stole your bicycle will feel guilty and bring it back to you." And sure enough, the next Sunday, both the preachers were riding their bicycles, and they stopped to talk and said, "Rev, I see you got your bike back. Did you do like I told you?" The other reverend said, "Yeah, I did just like you told me. When I got the commandment where it says, 'Thou shalt not commit adultery,' I remember where I left my bicycle."
Then you see, the only other difference is that people do what everybody else does. They follow with the herd, don't they? And the artist raises his voice. He lifts himself up. He says, "This is what I say, what I want to do, and this is what I'm doing. And I'll accept the penalty that goes with it." Do you know, huh? The others don't want to accept any penalties, Ben. Isn't that right?
Well,
They're playing safe.
They want it both ways.
That's right. Yes, you can put it that way. That's right. Sure. Sure.
All right, let's put it your way. You said they're playing safe, therefore the other way is unsafe.
Yes, the other way is a great risk. It's the great challenge, the great risk. Exactly, exactly that. But, in my mind, it's the safest way. Do you see? It's paradoxical, isn't it? I think so. Mm. You know, you don't lose in this game. When you play everything, you play the whole thing, you know, right through, huh? You stake your life. If you lose it, you find yourself, as it were.
Friday afternoon in the universe, in all its directions, in and out, you got your men, women, dogs, children, horses, phones, ticks, hurts, pots, pans, pools, pawls, pails, parturiences, and petty thieveries that turn into heavenly Buddha. I know, boy, what's I talking about, cause I made the world, and when I made it, I no lie had a Lucian Midnight for my name, and concocted up a world so nothing, you had forever thereafter make believe it's real. But that's all right, because now everything will be all right, and we'll soothe the forever boys and girls, and before we're through, we'll find a name for this darn golden eternity and tell a story, too. And, but, did you ever read a story as fast as this that begins Friday afternoon with working men on scaffolds painting white paint? And ants merling in little black dens? And microbes warring in your kidney? And Messerulis microbing in the innards of Mercury? And microbes dreaming of the ultimate microbehood? Which then ultimates outward to the endless, vast, empty atom, which is this imaginary universe, ending nowhere, never even born, as Bankei well polled when he ferried his mother over the rocks to twat UT, and people visit his hut to inquire, "What other planet features this?" And he answers, "What other planet? Though the sounds of the entire world are now swimming through this window from Mrs. McCardiola's twando and old Polk's home drunk again, and of course you hear the cats wailing in the whale bar, wild bar, wart fence, moonlight, midnight, Lucian, Dolophine, immensity, visions of the Tathagata, seat of purity and womb. And so that here's all this infinite immaterial, meadow-like golden ash, swarming in our enlightened brains, and the silence shifallying in our endless ear, and still we refuse, naked and blank, to hear what the who? The who? To what you? We'll say the diamond boat and persipine, recipine, milltown, heroine, and fac matches the silver ages everlasting, swarm swallowing in a simple broom. And at night you raise the square white light from your ghost beneath the root drinking tree, and coyote won't hear you, but you'll ward off the inexistent sea devils just to pass the time away. And meanwhile, it's timeless to the ends of the last light year. Might as well be getting late Friday afternoon, where we start those old sounds and come home when work's are done and drink his beer and tweak his children's eyes.
Thank you.
Charlie Parker looked like Buddha. Charlie Parker recently died laughing at a juggler on TV. After weeks of strain and sickness, was called the perfect musician. And his expression on his face was as calm, beautiful, and profound as the image of the Buddha represented in the East. The lidded eyes, the expression that says, all is well.
Now, Phyllis, Leonard says I'm supposed to be the toastmaster, the sort of the Georgie Jessel Jazz. So, Charlie, I want to award you now the Downbeat Award for the best alto sax man of 1951. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
And this is to you from Downbeat for being one of the top trumpet men of all time. Congratulations, Diz. I mean, Dizzy, I got a little informal. You boys got anything more to say?
Well, Earl, they say music speaks louder than words, so we'd rather voice our opinion that way.
There's never been anything like it before. Penetrating the Arab countries, which was really a hermetic society, and then their affiliation with the political activists, all that went on in the 60s, although the Beats were originally non-political, others who were political were really following the Beat movement to its logical conclusion.
But Kerouac didn't seem to have any sense of that or desire for it or acceptance of it.
Well, no, he didn't. He was completely apolitical. I don't think he ever took part in a demonstration or signed a petition. But he started it. Jesus Christ said, by their fruits ye shall know them, not by their disclaimers.
My father, my mother, and my sister and I have always wanted a Republican. Always. We voted for Hoover.
Have you no ambition?
I was 6 years old, voting for Hoover.
The only thing that the type of police state oppression forces on us is the next convention we're going to have to take 10,000 of us and run naked through the streets with smeared with strawberry preserves or something. I mean, it's got,
maybe I could lick it.
My wife, maybe. No, but I mean, you know, they force you into an incredible position in the world when you want to protest or you want to make your voice known in a benevolent way, and yet at the same time you're pushed and clubbed, you know, and
you make you make yourself famous by protest.
That's not who does. Not
you.
Me. No, why? Make myself famous by singing smut.
I made myself famous by writing songs and lyrics about the beauty of the things that I did and the ugliness too.
You're a great
poet. You make yourself famous by saying, down with this, down with that, throw eggs at this, throw eggs at that.
I'm not with you. That's not what I want.
I cannot use your abuse. You may have it back.
Okay, you're still... You're a great poet, and we admire you. In fact, it's your fault that we're...
I'm a character. It's something of beauty. And it influence. You open up the head to beauty. When you open up the head to beauty, you open it up to spirit. Now, what is spirit? Most people have it as cereal. They have it, you know, up in the sky. Airy fairy bullshit. They do. They don't know that spirit is a hard, tough baby. You know? It really is. I mean, that's the one that outlasts the body. That's the one that hangs around the host, the body. Take it. The classy spirit hangs around you. You shit, you fart, and all that. The spirit's got to be there.
Well, that's why I feel like...
But the spirits do the same thing. The spirit's gas, right? Any form you want to give it. See, spirit has no form. Right? It takes you. Right? That's how you handle it.
There was an enormous fellowship between Kerouac and friends like...
I keep falling in love with my mother. I don't want to hurt her. Of all people to hurt. Every time I see her, she's grown older. But her uniform always amazes me for its Dutch simplicity and the doll she is, the doll-like way she stands, bow-legged in my dreams, waiting to serve me. And I am only an Apache, smoking hashi, in old kibashi, by the lamp.
I met her only once, toward the end of my relationship with...
Suddenly I turned. Dr. Sachs was standing there. What do you want, Dr. Sachs? I said immediately. Didn't want to hide. Didn't want the shade to overcome me and I pass out. I know that Dr. Sachs is speaking to the bottom of my boy problems and they could all be solved if I could fathom a speech. Came the long, hollow, sepulchral sound of triumphant Dr. Sachs's profound and hidden laughter. I made my own cackle laugh with hands cupped in the excruciatingly exciting dark shadows of Saturday night. How eagerly the youth doth pursue his legends with hungry eye, whispered Dr. Sachs, much amused. Would now the Korans of the grown-up gulpitude make keen misery of that hitch, a hitch will disgust your mind in time. A hitch is called time in prison. You'll come to rages you never dreamed. Me? Says I. Why? He says, you'll come to when you lean your face over the nose, will fall with it. That is known as death. You'll come to angular rages and lonely homages among beasts of day in hot, glary circumstances made grit by the hour of the clock. That is known as civilization. You roll your feet together in the tense befuddles of 10,000 evenings in company in the parlor in the pad. That is known as socializing. You'll go numb all over from inner paralytic thoughts and bad chairs. That is known as solitude. You'll inch along the ground on the day of your death and be pursued by the editorial cartoon Russian bear with a knife. And in his bear hug, he will poniard you in the ready blood back to gleam in the pale Siberian sun. That is known as nightmares. You look at a wall of blank flesh and fritter to explain yourself. That is known as love. The flesh of your head will recede from the bone, leaving the bulldog determination pointing through the peak jaw, tremulo jawbone point. In other words, boy, you'll slobber over your morning egg cup. That is known as old age, for which they have benefits. By and by, boy, you'll rise to the sun, propel your mean bones hard and sure to huge labors, great steaming dinners, spit your pits out, aching cock-love nights and cobweb moons, the mist of tired dust at evening, the corn, the silk, the moon, the rail. That is known as maturity, but you'll never be as happy as you are now in your quiltish, innocent, book-devouring boyhood immortal night.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Now, I should like to introduce a young man who many times you've listened to by way of his recordings, and likewise many times have you listened to him over the air. He's going to do a solo for us here, and I want you to get right on the beat and right in the groove with the one and only Cootie Williams. Let's give Cootie a nice, great big one, huh? That gets it, Brother Cootie. I see you came with your accompanist and all, huh?
That's right, Ralph.
Well, Cootie, here's the microphone.
I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and I thank you, Ralph Cooper, and I've also brought my piano player, Buddy Powell, and we're to play the West End Blues for you.
The West End Blues?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we're going to the other mic now.
All right. West okay.
All right, let's take a mic. Now, we're on the west side of town.
Yeah.
Yeah, now you can go right from here.
Oh, all right.
So you can't get mixed up, you know. Can't get mixed up, yeah.
Okay. You say you're leaving, won't be back no more. Further down the road, baby, you'll reap just what you sow. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop my show. I help you, baby, you couldn't help yourself. Now you're on your feet, you're helping somebody else. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop old Sonny Show. Tuck you in, baby, you couldn't help yourself. Now you're on your feet, you're helping somebody else, I got to tell you. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop my show. When I had money, had a plenty friend. Now I ain't got a dime like a road dollar in. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop old Sonny Show. You say you're leaving, this is your last go round. But I'll find me somebody, baby, before the sun go down. But that's all right, I want you to know. One monkey don't stop old Sonny Show.